Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of February, recording at 4:21 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, much earlier than usual. And this being Friday, this is also the big picture long-term outlook, including some up-to-date comments based on my observations in here today. Now, first, in terms of the overall global stock market cycle, you know my view, if you've been listening to these Friday audios, that I am working very much on the premise that Wall Street is in an overall secular bear market. That doesn't mean that it won't get wonderful rallies, as we've seen over the last nearly 2 years. But all the big bubbles that I've ever seen in stock market history or read about have been followed by long secular bear market trends, which I would define here, once again, as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields. In other words, stock markets don't do quite as well overall as the buy and hold environments of, say, the 1990s, and so investors become a little bit more conservative in their overall outlook, and they are not willing to pay so much for equities, and they want higher yields, and we'll get them in time. Now, whether the secular bear market is largely a ranging affair, as we saw from really 1967 into the early 80s when the next secular bull market got underway, or whether it's much more severe, such as what we saw in Japan following its peak in 1990, depends primarily on monetary policy, and the Fed's been very accommodative. So that has led to a better performance following the initial downside move by the Nasdaq, for example, relative to the Nikkei when it had peaked back in 1990. You can see that comparison chart on the website today, although it had a bug in it when I first sent out the email, and that chart's has now been replaced, and we reissued the email in terms of the public comment of the day. Okay, now factors that are relevant here for global stock markets. I maintain that within an overall secular bear market environment for Wall Street, that a number of markets, mainly emerging markets, will do exceptionally well during the medium-term upward phases for Wall Street, such as we've seen for the last 23 months. And my favorite of those emerging markets will be from Asia, particularly where we also have a supply inelasticity theme involved. But having just said that, my favorite overall market, less involved with the supply and elasticity theme, but I think is a hugely exciting play, and that is India, which I maintain is a better story than China overall, and the relative chart performance, I think, provides some pretty good evidence that some other people agree with me in terms of that comparison. What are some of the reasons in a nutshell? Well, first, democracy. To me, that's extremely important. Secondly, although I know there will be some hard-nosed types out there who, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but will say, well, come on, democracy's chaotic, and this kind of centrally controlled authoritarian capitalism that you have in China is likely to be far more efficient overall. Well, I take the point in some respects, but it's the long-term development potential with that form of government that I'm concerned about. I also think that India develops from being an English-speaking democracy. I also think that India develops, or beg your pardon, competes very effectively by not being overly dependent on manufacturing. For instance, the services sector of the Indian economy is, I think it's just over 50% in terms of contributions to GDP. I heard that statement during the G7 comments by the Indian foreign minister. Was it the foreign minister? Not sure, but financial minister, yes, the Indian financial minister today. China, by comparison, I think only has, the services economy accounts for only about 18% of GDP. Gonna cough here for a second. Excuse me. My feeling is that China, while peerless right now in terms of manufacturing competition, that is a really tough field. For instance, if we consider over the last, let's say, 3 decades, who've been the best manufacturing nations, well, certainly right up there, Japan and Germany. Japan and Germany, most people would rate them very high. And we see what tough competition they have actually faced in terms of not least being labor costs. Now, how's China going to actually deal with all of this? First, is China going to be the country that generates the superior products? Well, it'll generate some, but is China going to be producing the BMWs and the Sony equipment, other white goods that inventive Japan has actually produced? I think there's a big question mark there. Secondly, as China progresses on its move from being very much an underdeveloped economy towards a more developed economy status, the wages can only move up. I think manufacturing wages in China, for instance, are about 3 times what they are in India right now. Or maybe I've overstated that, but I've seen various different statistics. I think that one that I saw and actually put on the site not too long ago was that a little bit more conservative than that, saying that India's manufacturing costs were a third of those in China. So my point is, though, not the statistic, but the trend. What happens is China becomes more prosperous than other countries become major rivals for that foreign direct investment. And those countries, such as the United States and European countries that have been scrambling, and Japan that have been scrambling to open up manufacturing plants in China for a number of years, can shift that to India, they can shift it to Vietnam, or whoever is coming along with the more competitive wages in future years. So I think that creates a vulnerability for China as well. But enough on this. I do feel that the Chinese stock market has bottomed in here, and I've got a chart of the Shanghai A-Share Index to make that point today. Now, natural resources are a huge theme, my supply and elasticity theme, which I've been saying since 2003, is my theme of the decade, really. Now, read the Basic Points article. Well, I shouldn't be telling people what to do. I strongly suggest that you read the Basis Points article by Donald Cox. I think it's absolutely terrific. A lot of those themes will be familiar to you, but the detail that he goes into in his geopolitical assessment, the detail that he goes into regarding the history of the commodity cycles, and particularly the detail he goes into in terms of oil reserves and what's likely to happen in that direction, I think it's all hugely informative. As I say, a major report to save, because one will want to be able to go back and refer to that from time to time. So, but the bottom line for me, the natural resources theme, that and emerging markets, those are my two big stories in the big picture, long-term outlook. Now, as attractive as those emerging markets are, when Wall Street gets a significant downturn, those markets will be reined in, and they may actually outperform Wall Street on the downside, if only because a lot of American investors and European investors who've been piling into the emerging markets over the last couple of years will take some of that money back. They'll get frightened. They'll nail down the profits. That's the way markets move. But right now, it's still good. It's still go. I think we're in the end game, as you know, in terms of this medium-term rally. I'll stick with my best-case scenario that we carry well into the first quarter of this year, and we're into the second month of that quarter, and so far so good. After Wall Street's very ropey start, that has at least steadied, and as long as last month's lows hold for the US stock market indices, I will remain relatively relaxed. I've been very pleased to see Australia move up to new highs last week and extend those gains this week, and I'm very pleased to see New Zealand's stock market index confirm what is happening in Australia by breaking up very strongly. I'm pleased to see the way India has rallied back up to new highs. So this is still an environment where stock markets are in form. As I said earlier in the week, it's a situation that liquidity rules okay. And as long as that liquidity remains abundant, then I think these markets are going to do reasonably well. But we see factors that are contributing to the endgame environment, at least as I've identified it, and that is the rising interest rates in the United States. So that's a threat to liquidity. Also, I think we may well get that oil price pushing up above the $50 level before too very long. That's another threat to liquidity. And then there's just the threat to liquidity from economic success. If we were to have a surprisingly good economic year, surprisingly good, I mean, in comparison to what most people have been forecasting, I think most expectations for 2005 are relatively modest in terms of GDP growth. If it surprises by being better, that will siphon off more liquidity from the markets. But in the short term, we've seen this M&A activity being very bullish for markets, and clearly there is still enough liquidity around to support these gains. And also, we have not had a rout in the long bond markets, or rather the opposite, actually. They're doing rather well, particularly U.S. Treasuries today, to my chagrin, on the lower employment figures. So if long-dated bond yields are not rising sharply, and the leading stock market indicators remain in consistent upward trends, then I think we're going to see further gains in the near term, and that's very much what we... that's very much the picture that we have today. Okay, moving on to government bonds. Again, I'm of the view that the secular bull market ended in June of 2003 and that we're in a very extended phase of overall top formation development. I have been on a much shorter term basis in and out several times in terms of opening some short positions, a little bit in the JGBs, and particularly in the U.S. Treasuries, and have taken several profits from that trading subsequent to that June 2003 peak. Right now, I'm hurting with my short positions in this fixed interest area, and we've got U.S. Treasury bonds up 1.530 seconds as I speak because there were less jobs created by the latest statistic du jour coming out of the U.S. today. So that is still a strong market. And this is beginning to feel a little bit too masochistic, and I may well chop or at least reduce this position overall, because even though I think that bond markets, global bond markets, are an accident waiting to happen, I have said that this could well be a long-delayed accident, and I will always have the option of coming back in when the charts begin to reflect that there is some real downward scope. But I'm not happy to be running shorts after we're seeing these U.S. Treasury bonds maintain a break up out of their previous trading range of several months' duration. Moving on to the currency markets, the it is still too soon to say that the U.S. dollar's rally is over, even though I believe that we've probably seen the best part of the U.S. dollar's rally overall. One of the big themes in currency markets, always, particularly when we get a period of predominantly ranging market activity without big swinging trends, and that's been what we've seen more often than not over the last year and a bit, that big theme is yield. And that's one of the reasons why the New Zealand dollar has had a pretty good performance overall. It's also why the Australian dollar, ditto, has had a good performance overall. To a lesser extent, it's been supportive of sterling. And with the U.S. interest rates rising, and the U.S. federal funds rate now up to 2.5%, that's hardly a mouth-watering yield, but there is the prospect that the very real prospect that the yield will continue to improve, so that's cushioning the dollar a little bit. And then, of course, you remember the earlier comments about that big support level on the U.S. dollar index at 80, which was a fairly obvious point for some steadying. So at this stage, say, while I feel, and to put this more in a very long-term context, you know, there's the big school that's saying that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse, and so we see article after article on that subject. I don't buy into that. I never have, as you probably know. My feeling is that the worst of the dollar's bear market has already been seen. As a little fundamental background for that, I would argue that the old purchasing power parity, I don't put a huge amount of stock in that, but certainly that makes the dollar pretty attractive vis-a-vis the euro. However, we know there are other factors that to concern people, such as the deficits, and the one that concerns me most is the amount of dollars that are in circulation. Yes, the Fed has intentionally sought a weaker dollar over the last few years and succeeded. And I think we'll still see a massive amount of dollars in circulation. And my overall view, though, is that, as I say, we've seen most of the dollars a bear move that we're likely to get, but that it probably isn't over, and I think that this year we will go back down and retest and go through that low on the dollar index around the 80 level. But in the very short term, as I have been saying, I cannot say that the move is actually over. The dollar rallied yesterday, and it's rallying again in here today. The euro firmed early in the day, but has given up that ground, and we're currently at 129.25 against the euro as I speak. Now, with that tone, that firmer dollar tone, that has created a very stiff headwind for a number of the dollar-related trades, not least being the gold market. Now, gold is down over $40 from its high that we had seen previously on. If you beg your pardon, that high that we had seen earlier in the year, and if you look at the long-term charts of gold, and I've posted that on plenty of occasions. You can find that on the website if you don't have it immediately to hand. Declines of $50 have been pretty much the extent of what we've seen within the dollar's uptrend of the last few years. So if we've seen now, as we have, a decline of $40, just over $40. My feeling is that we're much, much closer to a significant low for gold within its uptrend, and that the next big than we are to a high, and that the next significant move will be upwards. Can I say that gold has bottomed down here, currently trading at 415 and a quarter? No, I cannot, and I've been saying. I was saying that all along that reactions of $30 to $50 I feel create buying opportunities for gold, and therefore that I was certainly bullish at that around that 420 level, but repeating and remain bullish, but repeat that I won't be able to say, I don't think we'll be able to say that we have technical evidence that the dollar is bottomed until we get that quite clear upward dynamic, which I think has probably got to be a single day rally of at least $10. I think we'll see that before too long, but I obviously can't put a date on it yet, and the most important point is that it hasn't happened yet. But I think that repeat myself here, saying that gold's in a buying range at this level, and I think silver's in a buying range, 664 versus on the March contract. I think that's really quite attractive. I think all the precious metals are quite attractive at these prices, but they may go a little bit lower in the short term before they go higher. Now, if I'm wrong on the dollar, and if you think the dollar in saying that I feel that we've seen most of the dollar's rally, then we'll get a bigger downward reaction by gold than the $50 that we've seen being pretty much the limit of reactions during the uptrend of the last 3 or 4 years. That's not impossible, but basic premise in here, secular bull market for gold, not least due to all the credit creation that's taken place around the world, not least due to the fact that we have fiat currencies which don't hold their value, that central banks are always increasing the supply of these paper currencies, and that gold is hard money, and that there'll be plenty of interest and demand for gold. So my basic premise is, when you see a good shakeout in gold, that's the time to buy. And because there's so much ranging in the early years of a bull market cycle, it's usually a pretty good idea to lighten some of those long positions when you next see a really attractive rally. Okay. The industrial metals, I think this is a hugely attractive area. Most of them are in backwardations, as you probably are aware, and that means that the physical demand for these metals remains extremely high, led by demand from China, India, the United States, Japan, pretty much everywhere around the world. And we do still have a synchronized global economic expansion underway, albeit not all the cylinders firing in the U.S., let alone Europe, but it nevertheless is still a synchronized global economic expansion. Whenever that has occurred, we've had a bullish phase in the industrialized commodities. And this one is much, much more dynamic, this long-term cycle, because of the rapid development of China and India and other emerging markets. So I maintain that these industrial metals are also buys on reactions, as are the as are the shares. And those are my big themes, say the supply and elasticity trades and the emerging markets. And that's pretty much it, folks. I don't want to let these audios go on too long, so I'll just say, have a splendid weekend.